Hey Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
Granddad Business with Aaron Caliber.
That's my dad.
Hello!
Underpants?
That is hilarious.
She should mouth you.
Rate and review this podcast or my daddy will go into a deep depression.
Granddad Business with Aaron Caliber.
Yeah.
Boom. Welcome to Grown Dad Business. This is Aaron Kleiber. This week, I'm with my family in Virginia Beach. I'm having a great time. But I just want to introduce part two to my episode with Emma Arnold. This is part two. If you haven't listened to part one yet, go back to Grown Dad Business. Listen to part one. Emma has a very interesting life. She's been through a lot of different things in her life. The first episode, first part, we talk a lot about her special needs son. She also has six children, and three of them stepkids, three of them her own. Pretty crazy life. Then it gets even crazier. We learn a little bit more about how Emma became the person that she is. Gets a little deep. And I get to talk a little personally about, you know, my history, my past, some of the things that I've gone through. So this is a parental advisory warning or even a warning for anybody who has gone through any kind of abuse. So Emma and I talk about that a little bit. We really get into it. So if something like that bothers you, We're just letting you know that it's going to get deep. And if stuff like that does bother you, make sure you do talk to somebody. Talk to a spouse, talk to a partner, a best friend, a parent if you can. But this is a very serious issue. Being abused as a child and sexually abused and physically abused, the effects that it has on people are pretty powerful. And nobody wants you to carry that through adulthood and also into being parents as well. So we're going to talk a lot about that. It gets pretty grown. If you haven't listened to part one, and also as usual, if you want to check me out live, go to AaronKleiber.com. You know that. And a shout out to my sponsor, Goods and Evil, goodsandevil.com. You get 10% off any cool t-shirts and other wares. They have little bags, purses, things like that. Horror movies, and also a line of vegan. Yeah, if you're into that, they got that. You get 10% off with the coupon code GROWNUP, all one word, at goodsandevil.com. Check them out. And let's get into part two of my podcast, My Grown Dad Business, with Emma Arnold. So also I asked you about a tattoo you had, which really got me thinking a lot. Mm-hmm. It really did. My mom and I are survivors of abuse. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say this. It's interesting because my mom just got her first tattoo.
Oh.
And you have a tattoo. And I was like, you know, what if my mom and I got tattoos together?
Yeah.
And explain the tattoo you have, because I've never heard or seen this.
Oh, okay. So I have it's called the Stitch.
Yeah.
It looks like a little stitch. I have it on my arm. And it's the universal symbol for survivors of child abuse.
Yeah, I never knew that.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating. And
yeah.
I don't want to like bring it up all like...
No, it's totally cool.
You know, it I think bother. It's... Because the other thing is, like, I love, you know, people that listen to my podcast, they know I love talking to comedians of where they came from.
Yeah.
And not geographically.
Yeah.
Like where they came from as a person growing up. And because I think it's always fascinating how comedians become comedians.
Yeah.
There's always, you know, 9 out of 10 times something messed up happened in their life.
And the other one person who was like, oh no, I wasn't abused. And yep. then you'll start talking to him and they're like, well, my dad would hit me with this board against the side of my head. And I'm like, oh honey, no, you were abused.
Yeah. You had a weird childhood and you didn't even know it.
Yeah. Like there's always something or they're like, oh, well actually, my dad cheated on my mom with my aunt and I walked in and you're like, oh, okay. There's a reason.
Oh, okay.
You saw some things. Yeah. Yeah. There's always something.
What I meant to say was like, there's always that one person like, no, it's perfectly normal.
Yeah, they're always full of shit.
Like, nope. But yeah, that or it's like either I'm like, so your parents were great. And they're like, yeah. And then they're like, yeah, but I had 20 siblings. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah,
you had an interesting life.
Yeah. Or like,
I'm the youngest of 9.
Or they're like, oh, I got beat up every day in school. Like, yeah, there's always trauma. Always,
yeah,
there's always trauma. Yeah, the stitch, it started as the symbol for survivors of child sex abuse. It was started by speakyoursilence.org, which Jeff and I promote a lot. And we give part of our merch sales to and stuff. They're wonderful. They provide free counseling to the survivors of the adult survivors of child sex abuse. But it kind of branched out from there. And people started coming to shows with the same tattoo and being like, I'm also a survivor of just child abuse. But I connected so much with like, because we talk about it all over the place. And I talk about it in my act some. And people were like connected with that stitch idea, because the idea is a kind of like you've sewn your heart back together kind of thing. And people connected with it so much that I was like, I thought it was really cool that people just sort of made it their own thing. And it was just for the survivors of abuse in general,
right.
which I think is really, it's a really cool thing to like reduce the shame around it and to bring kind of.
And it connects you with people that, like you said, people have seen that you have that too. And
oh my gosh, like, so the Speaker Silence sells these little kits where you sew an orange thing, like on a piece of clothing or whatever. And people have sewn it onto their sports equipment. Like I've had like professional hockey players and stuff like tweet, like they've got it on their gloves and they're like, I'm a survivor too.
Wow.
And even just like the sex abuse stuff, like it's really common. 1 in 4 girls, 1 in 6 boys were sexually abused. And it's not something we talk about. People get so weird. If you bring it up, they're like, oh, I don't want to, oh, that's so real, you know? And it's just like, Any sort of trauma like that that you try to talk about, people get weird about. So I love it. I love that people are getting the tattoo, and it's an interesting, like it's that people will ask me about it, and I'm like, oh, I was a survivor of child abuse and child sex abuse, and they're like, oh, and you just have a tattoo and you're just talking about it. So I think it's a cool thing.
Yeah, I mean, I always ask comedians like, how did you become funny?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's always fascinating to me.
Yeah,
and especially you know people without. Kids, you know, that's what I talked to him about.
Yeah.
But you know, I love how you have both going on.
Yeah.
Both stories. And so like when, like, I will correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of people that like, for me, like it was a survival technique. It was just to like express myself and feel accepted. Mm-hmm. And now I still say like, I feel love and acceptance from doing comedy.
Yeah.
Like it makes me feel good about myself. It's something that I feel like a lot of people that are victims of abuse, they find some way to find love, to fill that, you know, hole in their heart that needs stitched up, you know, and that you can fill it with a lot of negative things, more abusive relationships, substance abuse.
Yeah. You're always self-medicating with something.
It's something. And it's amazing that comedy has been that for me in my life. It really has been.
Yeah.
Did you experience that early on, like being creative to kind of...
I was a very funny kid, but I was very odd. I didn't fit in with other kids. I was basically like a homeschool kid. Like I think I was just obnoxious mostly as a kid.
Yeah,
like
I was
people
too,
didn't understand my humor. Like I was super into Monty Python.
Yeah.
And so I was weird and
like
absurd.
Like a 13-year-old girl into Monty Python.
Yeah, like here's a perfect example. In 4th grade, I had just moved to a new school. Okay, and first of all, the first day of school, I told everybody I was a boy. And I pretended to be a boy for a week. And then I came back in and was like, actually, I'm a girl. And everybody's like, what the fuck is wrong with this child? Like, I was a very odd child. Like, and I just thought that was hilarious.
That's all right. I pretended I was black for like 5 years of my life. So that's true. People that know me.
But I, in 4th grade to fit in, I thought it would be a hilarious prank to, I took paper towels from the bathroom and I rumpled them up and burned around the edges to make it look like parchment. And then I wrote in red marker and made it look like blood. And I... wrote, you need to stop hogging the sandbox or I'm coming for you, signed Freddy Krueger. And then I buried them in the sandbox at my school for the like popular girls to find.
That is.
And I thought that that was the funniest fucking
spectacular
thing. But they found these notes and were like, fucking terrified, just absolutely horror, like so scared because they're just digging in the sandbox and they found letters from Freddy Krueger saying that he was going to come and eat them and kill them. And I didn't actually know who Freddy Krueger was. I wasn't allowed to watch the movies. I just knew that he was like baby a monster or something.
Yeah.
And I got in really big trouble for that. And nobody else thought that was as funny as I did.
The people that are also horror fans will love that.
Yeah.
Because I know people listen that follow like the movie stuff, and that's great.
Yeah. So that was the stuff I did to be funny. It was like weird, stupid shit that I thought was really...
Yeah.
And I don't think... I think, honestly, the reason I became funny wasn't as much because of my trauma as a smaller child. It was because... My real father, my biological father, is a monster. My parents split when I was like 7, and I had to go spend summers with him. But other than that, we had like almost no contact. Like it was very weird. And but my stepdad came into my life, and he was so wonderful.
Yeah.
And so kind to us, and like I was always like a skittish wild animal around him, but he was just like mellow and patient and
kind of
like
accepted who you were,
super zen, like just really patient and kind, and like really like reached out to me, like could see that I was funny, and so like encouraged me, always gave me comedy shit, and like I always was trying to be, I have 3 stepsisters, and I was always trying to like fit in, always around. I think my whole life has been spent kind of around the edges of stuff, trying to be like,
sure,
hey, me too, right guys. And so I think being funny was my way of like trying to gain acceptance from my stepdad because he had 3 daughters already. Like he didn't need one more fucking kid who was really broken and scared, like just a tragically broken kid. And so I was always like trying to make him laugh, and like making him laugh is still like one of my favorite things
and, you know,
to do.
To his credit, like what a good man.
Oh, such a good man.
For that.
I didn't think I realized until I was an adult. Now I have stepkids of my own. And I think I've really been like, oh, you didn't have to love me. Like, you didn't have to be kind to me. You didn't have to do anything. And like, he was just sort of there. He's kind of a rock. You know, like he's not a guy who's going to display emotion. He's not a guy who's going to say, I love you. But he will come and fix your water heater at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Like, he's just there for you.
I
really appreciate that now.
I definitely have that in my father-in-law, and I say that a lot, is like, that's the kind of guy he is. He's not going to like hug and kiss you and tell you I love you.
Yeah.
But this guy is, doesn't matter where you are, what you need.
Yeah.
He's that guy.
Yeah.
And did your stepdad, was he like that? Did your mom experience abuse? Did he kind of like...
Yeah. And so my father was abusive to both of us, but mostly to me. And I have a younger brother also. But he's 5 years younger. And so we left right after he was like pretty much right after he was born.
I kind of have the same situation.
So my brother still has a relationship with my father, and it kind of has always been like, I don't understand why you guys don't get along. And I'm like, I know you don't.
It is a tough thing. I mean, and I don't want to, you know, I don't talk about it much just for my sister who, you know, my stepdad was very abusive to my mom and I, but my sister was so little and she didn't experience that.
Yeah.
You know, and she still.
And I was also very good.
Close with her stepdad.
The summers.
Or her dad.
The summers that we would spend with my father, I was really good about shielding my brother from the abuse. Like I would provoke my father so that he would do shit to me and leave my brother alone.
Yeah.
And so my brother didn't experience a lot of the abuse I experienced because I was so protective of him. And so, I mean, I guess there's kind of a mixed blessing there because
that's even a tougher place to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And also he didn't experience the sexual abuse I did because I was the girl. I was the girl. And and this is an interesting thing. So I'm super public about being sexually abused.
Yeah.
And I do it. I talk about it in my act and stuff. But I haven't told my family. Like I haven't told my brother. I haven't talked to my family about it.
Really?
So when I was 10, I was in therapy because I was a really angry, fucked up kid. And, you know, bearing notes from Freddy Krueger and shit. And nobody could figure out what was wrong with me. And I was in counseling. I had this great counselor. And she finally kind of drew it out of me that I had been sexually abused. Or are we going over?
No, I'm pretty sure that my microphone wasn't on for about 10 minutes.
Are you serious?
Yep.
Oh, no.
Well, okay.
Well, that's a weird one-sided interview that people will be like, oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep.
Oh, well, mine's on, I think.
Well, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, so I went into counseling when I was 10. And then so my counselor was able to draw out that from me finally, very slowly, that I had been sexually abused. Mm. And I didn't say by who. I just said I had been. And then she had me tell my mother and my stepdad. And I told them. And my mom was like, I can't tell you why, but I know for a fact. And I just sort of very generally was like, look, I was molested. Mm-hmm. And my mom was like, I can't tell you why, but I can tell you for sure that you were never molested. And they pulled me out of counseling and we never talked about it again. And that really fucked me up because I had been terribly sexually abused. And
where did that come from?
Well, I buried that really deep. I buried all the sexual abuse. I never touched it until about 5 years ago when I got into counseling and started dealing with all this shit. And I got into treatment for like sex addiction stuff because I was really fucked up. Mm. And I started dealing with it. And around that same time, after my grandfather had died, like we were going through his stuff and I couldn't understand why my mom and my aunt were just throwing his things away, kind of like no love or care. And I'd be like, oh my God, don't you want to keep that? These are like special things. And, finally my mom, after weeks of going through this shit, pulled me aside and was like, I never, so my family's Swedish, by the way, they're super uptight. She was like, we're never talking about this again. Never bring this up to me again. But your grandfather sexually abused me and that's why we don't want to keep his shit. And he probably sexually abused your aunt too. I have no idea. We've never discussed it. We're never talking about this again. But this is why I knew you had never been sexually abused when you said that you had, was because I was always so protective with you and I never let you be around men, which was true. My mom was crazy about men. Like I wasn't allowed to do sleepovers. She was so overprotective.
Right.
And she's like, I know you weren't molested. Like when you said you were molested, I knew you weren't because I never let you be around men. Well, my mom worked nights and I was with my father every night.
Ugh.
And she didn't know. So she thought she had protected me from this thing that had happened to her. But then the same thing happened.
Right.
And I haven't told her again. Yeah. Even then, like she was telling me that, and I was just like,
"But doesn't she listen to your act or like?"
I've never done that stuff in front of her, and she doesn't listen to like podcasts or anything. It's this conversation that I know I need to have. I've told one sister, but I haven't told her. Part of it is I know it's going to devastate everyone, you know, and it's going to devastate her. And it's like this weird responsibility that I have of like, well, I have to be the one to tell everybody that this terrible thing that I've processed. Yeah. Like I've done a ton of EMDR and I've like really, and I'm kind of through it, but it's going to wreck everybody else. So
yeah, no, it definitely is a tough thing for parents that have children that are victims of abuse because you know, they feel like it's their fault.
Yeah.
And things like that.
It's going to be really hard.
Yeah. That's a tough thing to deal
with. Yeah.
And I mean, it sounds like you went through some pretty intense things.
Yeah.
I mean,
I was molested, molested isn't like, I hate that word. I hate the word molested because it's so tidy sounding. Like I was raped from the time that I was basically an infant till I was about 6 or 7 years old.
Ugh.
After my mom left, my father moved away and we would spend summers with him, but he stopped molesting me around that time. Oh. He was still really physically abusive, but maybe I aged out or something. Oh. I don't know exactly what happened. I mean, I guess I still remember sexual stuff happening, but he didn't rape me again after I was six. Oh. So, he also got sober for a few years in there. And I think when that stuff always happened, my father's like a huge alcoholic, and so I think that stuff happened when he was drinking and not when he was sober. So I think when he was sober, he was able to like be a different person.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing to have like this pocket of good memories after all of that shit. Cause he was sober for a couple years and was like really trying to be a dad for like just a quick sober window and then fell out, you know, just went to trash again. At that time, like I would, you know, walk him home from the bar. And I was like seven and knew how to do dishes, knew how to do laundry, knew how to cook because I was like the adult, you know? And so, it was pretty formative.
Yeah. When did you finally sever that relationship?
Only like, 3 or 4 years ago.
Really?
He would.
Like, did he have any relationship with your kids or?
Yeah, but never alone. Like, and also he kind of abandoned us. Like,
that's really like nice of you. Like, that's.
No, it wasn't nice. It was avoidance. Like, I.
No, but like.
Never.
To let him be in your life that long.
It wasn't nice. It was just because I never dealt with what happened. Like, I never even told my ex-husband. We were together 12 years. I never told him. Time when we first got together was like, look, my father was super abusive. And I was very much my mother. We're never talking about this again.
Right.
My father was super abusive. He was a monster. I don't ever want to talk about this again.
Yeah.
And he would come and visit me like once or twice a year, come into town like real quick and like hang out real quick and kind of like be weird and then leave again. And like, so it's not like I had a ton of, and he would call me, and every time I would see him, I would be wrecked for weeks. Just like, I would be super manic and like, or depressed and be like self-harmy and didn't really like never really accepted like why or what the reason was.
Right.
And when I got into counseling and I finally started to be like, okay, this shit really happened. Like I had memories of it that I had just pushed way down. And I just, I have likened it to if you, abuse is like holding a balloon underwater.
Yeah.
And every once in a while it would bob to the surface on accident. And I would be like, no, I don't want to do that. And yeah, so finally I started to let it come out.
Especially when you start, doing that, because I didn't really start having memories until I was in college. So I started dealing with things and like remembering things, and you're like, oh, it was worse than you thought.
Yeah. That's what happened. I think also that was part of it for me is like, I had all these memories and stuff, but they just sort of lived in this little compartment that I never touched. And when
like
I started, a dream. I also have like very few memories of my childhood. Like I have a lot of blackout, like, you know, stuff that starts with severe physical abuse and ends in a blackout. Like I have no weeks, months, years missing. And when I started EMDR, a lot of that shit finally came flooding back, and it was
and a lot of people worse. they don't know it till you really start dealing with it, because it does feel like it's like a scene in a movie you think you saw.
It's like a weird postcard that would sometimes go through my head,
and you're like, where did this image come from?
Did
this happen?
And I think also I started, like, when I started touching it, I started to be like, oh, this wasn't a normal, also after having kids, because I was super careful to not be abusive to my kids, and
I
like over the top. And sometimes I have to remind myself that it's that my goal was to make sure that, like, my kids will be like, you're so mean, and I'll be like, you don't even fucking know what a mean parent is. And then I'm like, oh, that was your goal. That's the end game, is that your kids don't know what a mean parent is. It's fantastic.
And I have that feeling as well. Like I've whacked my kids' bum a couple times. You know,
I've lost my shit a couple times and then been like, nope, but, that's not who I meant to be.
Once my kids reach an age where if that would ever happen, I remember, and it's painful, and you know what I mean, where it's like when I would see my kids where they thought I would like spank them, and they have that fear of you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I never want my kids to look at me like that.
No,
me neither.
Because
you know what that's like.
Oh, yeah.
And it's terrifying.
Yeah. I
never want my kids to fear physical harm from me.
Yeah, exactly. Ever. Or emotional abandonment. Or like, you know, because there was a lot of emotional abuse. Like my father would tell us that we were worthless, that we were garbage, or me specifically, you know, that I didn't deserve to live. And I feel like that emotional abuse is so deeply embedded in who I am. Like, and that the physical stuff, a lot of that, I can kind of just be like, well, yeah, he was an asshole. But like the emotional abuse really settled deep into, you know, core bone shit.
And it definitely, you know, it really is, when you think about it, it is a blessing that, you know, you hear about a lot of people who are abused as children become abusers.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I'm so thankful and blessed that I'm in a place where that was the opposite for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a moment in time for me where I remember being about 12 or 13 years old, going to a counselor, like a therapist, and just right in front of me talking to my mom saying like, oh, well, you know, he's going to be like a man soon. And, you know, he hits 15, 16, he's going to start pretty much beating, you know, you and your daughter. Like, basically, like, oh, it's coming.
Yeah.
He's going to get worse. Yeah. Like, it's sitting there.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of like, this bitch, like, what? Like, telling her that I'm going to become a monster. And I remember, like, thinking of that as, like, I met my wife right after high school, and especially having, you know, children, but, you know, thinking, no, you know what? No.
Yeah.
I'm going to prove that wrong.
Yeah.
Never, ever, ever.
Yeah. I think it really swung the other way for me, where I was like, I've always been, I'm not good about being angry. Because to me, like, being angry, for a long time, it was like, well, being angry is dangerous because it can spill so quickly into craziness. And so I never got mad about anything like my whole life. I had like never had any anger. It's only been in the last few years where I've started to be like, what is this feeling? Oh, this is anger. And so I think like I had like a extreme reaction where I was just like, okay, well, I'll just never be angry ever, even when it's appropriate and you should be angry. Like I had like a, and it's only, I'm only starting to like have healthy anger now.
Right.
After a long time.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I can always, you know, I'll wrap up with this. Like it's, I know, I mean, I can say that it's probably for you as well, is that you're happy that where you're at.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you can have this experience in your life become a positive experience.
It's a weird trade. And, you know, there's been often a lot of things, times where I've thought, like, would I trade? I feel like I am a very creative and thoughtful and compassionate person because I have been through fucking hell. And when people are like, oh, how did you do this? How did you, like, with comedy stuff, I'm like, I'm not scared of anything.
Right.
I've had the worst thing that can possibly happen to me.
Yeah.
What am I going to be scared that a crowd doesn't like me? Yeah. Are they going to rape me? Then fuck off. I don't care. Like, I really feel like it's made me very fearless. And it's like, Jeff always says to me, like, you're so fucking unbreakable. And I think that that is true. Like, I have been through the worst and...
Well, we've been broken.
Yeah. Yeah. I've already been broken.
So you know
broken.
What that feels like.
Yeah.
That's like when I went into middle school and like I was never afraid to like fight anybody, but I also didn't want to fight because like I you know, without getting into, I've explained it before on the podcast, but like, you know, I moved into a school that was an inner city school and I have like 6th, 7th grade black kids like punch me and I'm like, oh, they punch like adults. Like they're tough kids.
Yeah.
But I also remember thinking like I would get in fights and be like, ha, like, you're a child. I've been punched by a man.
Exactly.
Like, this is, you know, this is nothing.
I think, like, especially, I mean, I was a very fearful person, like, most of my life. Like, just I had a lot of anxiety. Like, would have a panic attack parking at Costco.
Yeah.
But in the last 4 years have really started to, like, since I'd finally turned around and let the balloon out of the water and just looked at it, I've kind of been like, oh, well, I survived that.
Right. Absolutely.
I can do all this shit.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah.
Yeah. That's, I appreciate you sharing that story.
Sure.
I appreciate you like doing this and talking
my pleasure.
To me. I think it's fascinating. And I love, one of my favorite parts about doing this podcast is that that people can relate to this, to all sorts of things, the way people grow up, whether it be painful or silly.
Yeah.
I think it's just fascinating that that people can relate to that.
Yeah.
And it does need to be talked about more,
yeah,
you know?
It does.
And also, like, I love sharing with people, like, where comedians come from.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That it's not, we're not goofballs. It's like, it does, a lot of
it comes pathological.
From. Yeah,
it's,
it does.
It is.
A lot of it comes from a place of pain.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like why you want to share joy and laughter with people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's a magical thing about comedy.
Yeah.
Is that like to take somebody somewhere for a minute and have them just enjoy their life.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to say we're some ambassadors.
I think you are in
a
way.
But it is a special thing.
You can talk to people about, I talk about being sexually abused on stage and people afterward come and hug me and say, I've had people tell me I've never told anyone.
Yeah.
I haven't told my wife. I haven't told my counselor, but I was raped as a kid.
Right.
And I've had people like, because they see that I can talk about it and still be warm and alive and funny that they're like, oh, maybe this isn't my fault.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Two things. One is that I always say when I have a conversation like this with somebody is that I think it is imperative that you have this conversation bond with your partner, with your spouse.
Yeah.
It's super important.
I will say, I want to say so often when people tell me why they haven't told their spouse that they were abused or raped or whatever, it's because they're like, I don't want to burden them. I don't want to give them, I don't want to tell them my, you know, dirty stuff. And then they know, like, that's going to be so hard for them to hear. But like, you are not burdening people by telling them your pain. Like, and you are doing them a favor. You're showing vulnerability. You're showing that you trust them. Please tell them.
I would say if that person is burdened by that, that's not the person for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's,
if that person's like, gross, then fuck that person. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So I think it's so important. And, you know, my wife has been amazing, you know, And the other thing I want to ask you, it's really tough. It's tough for me. And this is maybe a personal question. I don't know. Maybe we should turn the podcast off. Who cares? but, you know, people have said to me, they're like, well, why don't you talk about your abuse on stage? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know what's so funny about it.
How do you do that? I more bring it up because I tell a story about my stepdad and I beekeeping together. And yeah. The point of the story is it sort of addresses like these high standards for masculinity that we have and like right. how they're so unlivable, you know?
Yeah.
It started out just by saying that like I say my dad in this yeah. thing, but this is actually my stepdad. And then I just say that my father, you know, was my actual biological father was super sexually abusive to me and very physically abusive and is no longer part of my life in any way.
Right.
And then I kind of like make a few jokes about how, but that's why I'm so funny. So it's all worth it.
Yeah.
But I also feel like it's an important part of the story, even if it makes crowds a little bit uncomfortable for a second, right. I feel like it's really an important part of the story because it's like, this is a man who doesn't have to love me. And that's part of right. the story too, is that he's been so kind to me. So I do it in the beginning. And then I have a couple of jokes about like same thing about how like I used to be super fearful and be afraid to travel and stuff.
Right.
But then I realized, oh, you were raped by your father. What are you scared of? Like, that doesn't sound funny when I say it now, but it's actually a pretty good, well-written joke about like not being afraid of life and not being right. scared of pain.
Right.
Essentially. It took a while for me to make that stuff funny.
Right.
You know, it took a while for me to write it in a way that like people could hear, but not be like, too much, too much.
Right.
I think part of it is like, I approach it with a lightheartedness that is like, hey, this is just a thing. It's not,
right.
It's not something that wrecked me. I also think looking at me, you aren't like, that girl's a fucking disaster.
Right.
So that helps, you know, like you see me up there and I'm just like a person.
I appreciate that because I guess I see that as now like it's championing survival.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I have actually a pretty long set to do about why I don't spank my kids.
Yeah.
And a lot of the abuse shit is built into that and about how like whenever somebody's like, I was spanked as a kid and I turned out fine. I'm like, cool. I was spanked as a kid and turned out to be a softcore pornographer and a comedian. Don't fucking spank your kids. Don't ever do that. No, it's not worth it. You know? Yeah. And like, and it's just about how like, cause I'm talk about getting personal. You turn off the podcast now. I don't actually care. But, like I always have been super into BDSM stuff and like have a fairly dark sexual template, which is 100% because I was beaten a bunch as a kid and adrenaline and like your oxytocin and your dopamine shit gets fucked up as a kid.
Sure.
By having pain be part of your endorphin dump.
Right.
And that's stuck with me my whole fucking life. Yeah. You spank your kids, you are creating little adult spankers. That's what you're fucking doing. you spank your daughter, she's going to have a grown man spanker someday. Oh, so that's on you, bro.
I don't like it.
You just made that. And so like, spank your kids, but just know that for sure that contributed to my sexuality. 100%. So do what you want.
That's good advice.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
I'm so glad we ended on that note. That was just a beautiful, funny little spot.
I like ending it with a little grown-up tip, little parenting nugget
to
end it on.
Hey, if you were sexually abused, go to speakyoursilence.org. They offer free counseling and they help you reduce the shame around what happened.
I was just going to ask you about that, speakyoursilence.org.
Yeah, they're wonderful people and they've helped so many people and they really helped me reduce the shame. They were one of the big reasons I'm able to come out and be public about this and
help me. Definitely, you know, talk to somebody about it for sure. Mm-hmm. If you have a partner, spouse, boyfriend, girlfriend,
find some support. There are wonderful support groups out there. Yeah.
Speakyoursilence.org. And where can people see you? MArnoldComedy.com.
Yeah. And I have a show in Brooklyn at the Knitting Factory on June 16th. And
I don't know when this is coming out, but.
So whenever. Yeah.
I understand.
And I'm taking the whole month of July off. So fuck you guys.
And, you know, if you're a Doug Loves Movies fan, some people listen to this. You have probably heard Emma on there. She'll probably be on again.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you. Yeah, it was super fun.
Moro Casino, America. like a social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hey, Central Ohio. The nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's C-O-T-A.com. Good luck to all the runners.